Greetings to the brightest audience in Colorado, nay, in the nation, around the world. I am not Bob Enyart, America's most popular pastor of Denver Bible Church and America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. I am Doug McBurney, host of the Weekly Worldview, and I want to thank Bob for allowing me to sit in today, tomorrow. Are we allowed to say where Bob is and what Bob is doing? Bob's gone Hollywood. He's gone Hollywood on us. Bob's out in Los Angeles. I think he went out there to soak up some rays on the beach or something like that. Actually, it'd be the exact opposite of that. Bob will be locked in a building three floors below the surface of the earth for 4 to 5 days. How long? Maybe the whole week. We don't know. But he's on a very important mission out there in Los Angeles. So keep Bob in your prayers that his travels are safe and that the effort in which he's engaged is blessed by the living God of the universe. Because we all need that, and Bob especially needs it as he's out there in the wilds of Hollywood land. Okay, so, but Bob will be back with us soon, perhaps even by Friday, but I'll be sitting in, and I want to start out, first of all, I want to just start out with a memo to Matt Drudge. Okay, Matt, I'm not sure exactly what your problem is, okay? I have my suspicions. And Matt, I use your website every day. You're good at linking. What does Matt say? He links to the stinks, right? And Matt's good at that. But if you go to the Drudge Report today, and if you've been to the Drudge Report in the last few days, you'll notice that Matt Drudge's deviancy is seeping through more and more on his website. Matt, for some reason, seems to have a need lately to put up dirty pictures and dirty stories, and Matt, we're just sick of it. Don't you know that your website primarily appeals to conservative family-type people who don't need to see filth at the top of your page every time we open it, okay? We just don't need that, Matt. So just try and get it under control, Matt. You know, Matt is a perfect example of neoconservatives. A neoconservative is a conservative with loose morals. That's a neoconservative. And reports that Matt Drudge is not married and lives in his mother's basement are apparently untrue. He apparently has moved out of his mom's house. But Matt, you do such a great job for us, linking to the news reports that the medstream media avoid. That's right, I said the medstream media. You don't listen to the worldview. The mainstream media are ABC, CBS, NBC. They're all on prescription drugs, and they're out of their minds. So we call them the mainstream media. But Matt does a good job of linking to stories that they want to avoid. But Matt, we don't need the trash, okay? We just don't need it. Can I just move on from that now? What else do we have? America has been shaken today, and I know that trying to do a program that focuses on the culture and morality in the Bible is very difficult today in the light of Simon Cowell's impending departure from American Idol. I know, it's very hard to focus on other things, but I want to ask you to bear with me because we're going to get into some things that are a little bit more important than that. I am trying, my producer is trying to set up a conversation with a young lady. I read an unfriendly blog a few weeks ago about a presentation given by a young lady named Stephanie Gray. And Stephanie is the founder of the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform. She gave, I don't want to get into the presentation. I'm hoping we'll get her on the phone and she'll be able to acquit herself of the presentation. But Stephanie has given pro-life presentations across North America and the UK. That's the United Kingdom for all you public school teachers out there. She's spoken at the University of Toronto, York University, the University of Calgary, Johns Hopkins University, George Washington University, and the University of Sussex, which is in England for all of you public school students out there. She has also debated abortion advocates such as Ron Fitzsimmons, executive director of the National Coalition of Abortion Providers, and Dr. Jan Naverson, a philosophy professor. One presentation attendee at one of Stephanie's presentations reportedly said, "I came in choice. I'm leaving in life." Wow, that's powerful. So Stephanie sounds like our kind of girl. Now, Stephanie holds a Bachelor of Arts in Political Science from the University of British Columbia, and she is the founder and the executive director of the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform. And I believe we've got her on the phone. Let's try it. Stephanie Gray, are you with us?
I am. Thank you for having me on.
Well, it's just a pleasure to have you on, Stephanie. I was telling our audience about an unfriendly blog I read a few weeks ago regarding a presentation you made at a certain university.
Yes.
Now, I believe that it was Columbia University. Am I correct?
That's correct. I spoke at Columbia University in November.
Now, is that the same Columbia University that produces the lawyers that defend Al-Qaeda? Are we talking about the same Columbia?
I guess so. This would be the Canadian-American difference. I don't know.
Is it the big Columbia in New York City?
It's the big Columbia in New York City, if that's the answer to your question.
Stephanie, you have got some nerve as a pro-life activist to even show your face on Columbia University. We're very proud of you.
Oh, well, thank you. I was grateful to be welcomed to the campus by a stellar group of young students who have formed a pro-life club there.
And wait a minute, Stephanie. Stephanie, my audience is already in shock knowing that there's a pro-life group in Canada, and now you're telling them that there's a pro-life group at Columbia University?
Believe it or not.
perhaps all is not lost. Perhaps all is not lost. And Stephanie, I want you to be able to speak for yourself, but the unfriendly blog I read a few weeks ago attacked you specifically because you compared abortion, the modern practice of abortion,
mm-hmm.
to the Holocaust in Nazi Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And you've been roundly criticized by people on the left and on the right, frankly, as most pro-life advocates who compare abortion to the Holocaust have been.
Right.
Stephanie, I did a little research that I want to bring up later, but I want to, there were three thoughts that I read in an article from your website, three separate perspectives with problematic ideas about pro-life strategy you say have been promoted. The first, you tell us, was a National Post article by a lady named Barbara Kay in which she called the Genocide Awareness Project, which visually compares abortion to the Holocaust, she called it the worst use of the pro-life movement's time and resources and called for a shift in pro-life messaging to bridge to people like her. Now, first of all, what is the Genocide Awareness Project? And can you enlighten us on your take on Barbara Kay's position?
Yes. Well, the Genocide Awareness Project, in short form, is called GAP. And it's a photomural exhibit that our parent affiliate in the United States, the Center for Bioethical Reform, created in the mid-1990s and has been traveling across the United States, now us doing the same thing in Canada, and now it's reached, into Europe and other parts of the world. And it visually compares the victims of abortion with pictures of victims from other atrocities, such as Jews during the time of the Holocaust, the Tutsis in Rwanda. And our point is to say, just as historically mass injustice was rationalized on the basis that the victims were somehow subhuman, non-persons, animalistic, parasitic, so too today is abortion being rationalized with the same mentality, the idea that the preborn child is somehow not a child like you and I are children of our parents, that the preborn child is subhuman, parasitic, not a person. And so our point is, just as it's wrong to dehumanize those in the past based on their skin color or their religion or their culture, it's also wrong to dehumanize people in the present simply because of their differences in their size or their level of development or how dependent they are on their parents in comparison to you and I, who would be more independent.
Wow. Amen. Preach it, sister. I don't think I've heard such an eloquent defense of the necessity to compare this current atrocity with atrocities in the past. Stephanie, we're blessed to have you in the pro-life movement. I just want to thank you for that.
Thank you.
Now, what would you say in regards to an article written by Marvin Olasky where he criticized pro-lifers who display abortion imagery and who liken abortion to the Holocaust. He said we need a less controversial approach. What say you to Marvin Olasky?
Yeah, that that was an interesting article that I saw around the same time as that Barbara Kay piece. Now, the Barbara Kay piece was printed in Canada. His was printed in the United States. But both were conveying this idea that we almost need to be very secret-sensitive to the point of watering down the message. Now, I would propose that those who would make these claims would probably not describe what they're proposing in terms of watering the message down. Hmm. But what they were proposing was an elimination of that which is really going to rock the boat, be really graphic, be really disturbing, result in people being really upset. And certainly we shouldn't do things to make people angry. We should do things because they are true, because they change people's minds, because they're effective. But sometimes when you do what's true and that changes people's minds and that's effective, results in some people being angry. It has an effect. So I don't do something to make people mad. But sometimes the effect of doing that which is good makes people mad. And I can't stop doing what is good simply because of that, sometimes what people would call a bad effect. And so tragically, what's happened in some areas of the movement is people will want to shy away from that which is controversial. And what we're saying is if it's true, if it's a reasonable method that's been tried and tested and it works and it changes minds, then we can't let the resistance of some stop us from reaching the masses.
Wow. You know, Stephanie, it's like a friend of mine says that the truth is unavoidably upsetting to those who hate the truth.
Mm, exactly.
And we've got to speak the truth. I'm with you on that.
Right. And I mean, you know what I often say to people is we all know that even in our personal lives, there'll always be that family member or that friend that's more blunt with us than other people.
Mm.
And we may lash out at them, not physically, you know, but we'll say, you know, oh, you're just wrong, or we'll get really upset. And what do? We go to our friend and we say, can you believe what so-and-so said to me? How dare they say that? And you know what? That friend's probably thinking that person was right.
I'm glad someone finally had the nerve to say it, right?
What's that? Yeah, exactly. Someone has the courage to say it. And then, but what happens is you get a dynamic going of good cop, bad cop. That friend maybe we'll have the opportunity to minister to you because of the first person's very blunt, you know, statement to you. And that first person is bad cop, but the other person's good cop. But you know what? Even though they didn't talk to each other, they're working in synergy together.
Mm.
And, you know, when we talk about the need to be blunt and be bold and show the pictures and get out there and really engage the culture, we're not saying we should not help women through their pregnancies, that we should not, you know, encourage adoption. Of course we should encourage adoption. Of course we need to help women through their pregnancies, and we need to have that relational, very pastoral arm of the movement that can really walk with women and men day in and day out. But we also need the prophetic arm of the movement that really proclaims truth and often suffers great persecution for it. And what we're trying to stress is for the pro-life movement to see the need for a holistic approach, that just as a body has different parts that are all needed for the greater working of the whole, the pro-life movement has different arms. There's a political arm, there's a pastoral arm, and I would say there's very much a prophetic arm. And what's important is that we recognize the place for each arm. And sometimes what I see happening is those who want to resist the controversial, you know, won't acknowledge the place for it, even if they themselves aren't on the front line.
Wow. Very, very, no truer words have been spoken. You know, it reminds me, Stephanie, I have friends who are at the Denver, I'm here in Denver, Colorado, we have the largest abortion mill in the country, soon to be eclipsed by Houston. But
I read that.
Yes. As of right now, we have the largest clinic, and there's a couple there. The husband is what I think you would call the prophetic arm, because he prophesies and witnesses against those who are shedding innocent blood. Mm-hmm. His wife is the pastoral arm. She helps women through their pregnancy. She gets them to the crisis pregnancy center. She gives them the information that can help them.
Right.
So we are a body, and we have to work together, because we're working toward the same goal, and that's to save unborn children from slaughter and to prevent the shedding of innocent blood. And Stephanie, to prevent the hearts of the mothers and fathers from being turned against their children, which is what's happening.
Absolutely. We need to humanize that unborn child and help the parents build a connection to the child who's growing and developing, albeit very small and vulnerable, but nonetheless as much of a person as the parents are. And we need to help them connect to that child and attract them to the child and turn them off of abortion. It's a two-pronged approach.
Very, very good. Hey, finally, Stephanie, you said you were at a meeting where an event host criticized the Genocide Awareness Project, GAP.
They
criticized, arguing that the pro-life movement needs to align its strategy to that of a marketing model in order to avoid turning people off.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think you've already at least partially addressed that question, but why is it, Stephanie, that the pro-life movement that doesn't shy away from the controversy, those of us who aren't afraid to elevate social tension over the killing of children, why is it we can't seem to market ourselves? Why can't we follow a marketing model?
Well, I would say that social reform is very different from marketing. In marketing, you're trying to sell a product, and oftentimes it's the same product, but you just, you put different colors on the bottle of Pepsi, and suddenly people will buy it. Whereas what we have to do is change the very way our culture thinks. We are living in a very selfish culture. It's me-first mentality. You put the self before the other, and we can't package that in a way to make people, want that. We have to completely throw away that. That's not something, we have to say, you've got the wrong interest, you've got the wrong desire, I'm going to change your desire. But you know what, that's harder because it's a longer term approach. You really need to build a culture that is selfless, that puts the other first. And so what we look to is not so much marketing as the history of social reform.
Ah.
So we have looked at historical social reformers, such as the civil rights movement, the anti-child labor movement, the abolitionists in Great Britain. And we said, look, they managed to change their cultures. Their cultures were very deceived in terms of their mentality and their value of human life and everything like that. So we said, well, what did the social reformers in history do to change their culture? And what they did was they very much rocked the boat. They proclaimed popular messages, not popular messages, but unpopular ones.
Yeah.
But they did it in a spirit of respect. They were civil. They were kind and compassionate, but they were also just and truthful. And so what we see is that those who ultimately achieve social reform aren't popular when they live. They're often only popular when they die.
Oh, how so true that is, Stephanie. Wow. Now, I want to bounce a couple things off you. Now, first of all, just thank you and God bless you for being a part of the pro-life community in our fine neighbor to the north, Canada.
Well, thank you. And, I have to say, I love Denver. I've been there several times. And actually reminds me of where I currently live in Calgary. You got the mountains.
You're straight north of us.
I am, yes.
Yes. Well, you've got to come down and visit us. We'd love to have you. Stephanie, have you ever done any research into the total number of abortions performed since legalization became popular back in the 1960s? Has anyone ever studied that out?
Well, I mean, as far as I know, the numbers, like if you look in the States, you have about 1 to 1.2 million abortions every year. So since it's been legal, I think your numbers are pushing about 50 million.
Right, right. I'm talking worldwide, Stephanie, worldwide, globally.
Yeah, worldwide I haven't, other than knowing that the annual rate now, according to the Guttmacher Institute, is about 42 million. So you multiply that year after year after year that we've had abortion extremely widespread across the world. I mean, we're just talking about an atrocity that is unparalleled to other atrocities in terms of the sheer loss of life, the numbers of people.
You're right, Stephanie, and this gets to the argument that we should not compare abortion to the Holocaust because they're simply not on the same level. The best estimate I've been able to find of abortions performed, committed, since the 1960s is a worldwide is approximately 971 million abortions.
Mm. Yeah.
971 million. Now, I've done a little bit of research, Stephanie, to try to put together a number, an estimate for the number of deaths in all the wars of all mankind throughout the entire recorded history of the human race.
Oh, wow.
Okay? The best estimate I can come to, and this is on the highest, this is taking into account the highest estimates of every war, not only every war, every genocide and every atrocity, approaches 660 million.
Wow, so a difference of 300 million.
So the abortion holocaust is a full third more heinous than all the wars, all the atrocities, all the genocides recorded throughout all of human history. So, Stephanie, I think your strategy of waking people up by comparing the current abortion holocaust to other genocides throughout history is not only appropriate, but in your own words, you're being civil, you're being respectful, you're being kind. But most importantly, you're being truthful, Stephanie, and we thank you for that. God bless you. I want to wish you and the your organization, the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform, I want to wish you all the best in your efforts. What are you doing up there, Stephanie? Is there anything you've got going on right now that is part of your effort to help end abortion in Canada?
Well, yes, we routinely give presentations. Well, we go into the States several times a year. Primarily, our talks are in Canada. So last year, between my colleague Jose and I, we gave, I think it was over 100 presentations. And besides that, we do our Genocide Awareness Project at the University of Calgary. We work closely with a student club there that does the exhibit every semester. And then we have a truck with the graphic images of abortion on the sides and rear panel, and
wow,
we drive that several days a week to keep the message out there and the image in people's minds so that regardless of where a woman is, even if she's far from the clinic, if she sees the image on the highway and a couple weeks later discovers she's pregnant, we hope the message that she saw inoculated her to the point where she will resist abortion rather than fall prey to it.
Wow. So elevating awareness, elevating social tension, really, up there in our fine neighbor to the north. Stephanie, well, I'll tell you, down here in Colorado, we are in the final weeks of a petition effort to amend our state constitution to establish the personhood of the fetus. Are you familiar with what Harry Blackmun wrote in the Roe versus Wade decision regarding the personhood of the fetus?
I have read some of it, but if you have a quote there to give me a refresher,
well,
go ahead.
what he said, Stephanie, was that if the personhood of the fetus is ever established, the case for legal abortion collapses.
Mm.
That's what Harry Blackmun wrote, and so that's our effort here in Colorado. And I knew, Stephanie, that having you on and letting our listeners here in Colorado know that we're not alone out here in the wilderness. We have friends in Canada who are working to elevate social tension, working to save children. That, you know, it's like Elijah when he was so convinced that he was all alone and God said, well, let me open your eyes. And he showed him 7,000 men who hadn't bowed their knee. Stephanie, just knowing you're out there and knowing that you're working to elevate social tension regarding abortion in your country, Stephanie, I hope that you would prayerfully consider finding out all you can about our personhood movement down here in Colorado. It's been a bit controversial. It has offended some people on the left and on the right, but it's a movement that we believe in, Stephanie, because we believe in the truth. We believe an unborn child is a person, and we believe that there is no better time than now to do the right thing, even if it's offensive and even if it is hurtful to some people and even if it's a little bit scary to some people because we might provoke a confrontation. So, Stephanie, I hope you'll find out all you can about personhood, and folks out there in the audience, find out all you can about the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform. Stephanie, what's the website our audience can visit to find out more about you?
Sure. Our website is unmaskingchoice.ca. So that's unmaskingchoice.ca.
Unmaskingchoice.ca. Stephanie Gray, the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform. Stephanie, we'll keep you in our prayers, and please do the same for us. God bless you, and thanks for being with us.
Thanks very much. Have a good day.
You too. Stephanie Gray, the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform. Now, I had some brief conversations with Stephanie before the interview, Stephanie is not convinced that personhood is the proper strategy right now. And I thought about maybe trying to confront her or maybe even, I don't know, maybe trying to trip her up. But instead, I just figured I'd bless her in what she's doing and I'd make the best case for what we're doing. And let's all keep Stephanie in our prayers that she'll come around and realize that there's never a wrong time to do the right thing. The unborn child was a person yesterday. The unborn child will be a person tomorrow. And Stephanie will come around. All of them. All the pro-lifers, if they're really pro-life and they really love the Lord. And I get the feeling from Stephanie that she really loves the Lord and that she loves unborn children. I just know that at some point, in the not-too-distant future, she will be a part of the personhood effort because it's simply irresistible wisdom. It's undeniable truth. And if we can't, as a movement, fight for the simple, undeniable truth, well, then everything else we do seems to lose a bit of its impact. It's the simple, undeniable truth that we don't want to avoid. Okay. So did anyone realize that? That more abortions have been committed since legalization became fashionable in the 60s than all the wars and all the genocides of all of human history. Now, that's the best estimate I can make, and I wasn't present during all the wars in history, but spend a little time on the internet. If you can come up with some better numbers, let me know. So I've always thought that abortion is a genocidal act against an entire class of people, and that's how it should be presented. And for those of you in the audience who maybe lived through the Holocaust and you're sensitive about it, keep in mind that World War II, all of World War II, 70 million were killed. I mean, just here in the U.S. and Canada, we've killed more than that since legalization began through the abortion Holocaust. And not to diminish the Holocaust in any way or the wickedness of the Nazis, but the people executing this Holocaust are as wicked and more insidious than the Nazis. Because they teach half the people who survive their Holocaust, they teach them to support them and to love and worship them like a false idol. The Nazis were the devil with their mask off. The abortion industry is the devil with its mask on, convincing women that they're exercising their rights as they slaughter their children and become murderers. Thank you very much for being with us. That's Bob Enyart Live. I'll be back with you tomorrow. Until then, may God bless you, may the grace of the Lord go with you, and Maranatha Christian Center, what a great Christian school in Arvada, and we're at KGOV.com.